Welcome, friends. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, 11th December 2013, here in Japan. Today, we are talking once again to our good old friend Jack Blood of DeadlineLive.info and of the Jack Blood podcast, which is now available from Deadline Live. Jack, always good to talk to you. Thanks for the time.
Been a while, James. I really miss talking to you. You're one of my favorite news reporters out there. I'm very comfortable in saying that I think you've been a huge asset to the betterment of the world. So something you and your family can be proud of and all your great supporters.
I've got a huge what? Asset. Yes, of course. Well, thank you so much for that. I do appreciate that. And I, you know, right back at you. I really do appreciate the work that you do. And 2 months or whatever it's been is way too long. So I think we have to cover quite a bit this time. So,
well, we just did. I know we're not going to talk about this, but people, please go to DeadlineLive.info and look at our 50th anniversary JFK podcast series. I've got two more to go where we'll finally wrap up the whole thing and tell you who the shooters were. And we've just really benefited from a lot of information that's recently come out in the last year or two. So we've had some amazing people on that broadcast, and they're really fun to listen to. Chock full of information, maybe only an hour long. And people are asking, why JFK? Why do we care anymore? Well, look at the succession of leaders since JFK. And that includes Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton. Something is wrong in Denmark or in America.
Exactly right. Yeah, no. And of course, we all know Reagan was basically Bush anyway. So, yeah, what a sad, sad reign it has been. And I think you're exactly right. And that's why we covered it here on the Corbett Report. And that's why I'm glad that you're covering it there on the Jack Blood podcast as well. All right, let's get into the news, because so much going on right now, and revolution seems to be in the air once again. And, of course, we're looking at the Ukraine, where apparently they don't want to sign some deal with the EU, and that means revolution, spontaneous revolution, right? What's going on in the Ukraine? What's your take about what's happening right now?
Well, interesting, if you contrast the two, the Ukraine to Thailand, which we could talk about in a minute here, where Thailand is going up against a repressive, nepotismic regime, right? I mean, this is real revolution. I'm always very skeptical because we know how this stuff works. But if you contrast the two, the reaction to the protesters in Thailand and then contrast it to the reaction in the Ukraine, you're going to get two totally different scenarios. In the Ukraine, of course, the West is backing the revolution. Why not? This is exactly what Brzezinski and Soros and these guys have been working on for years. And this is part more of a covert war going on with Eurasia. That would be Russia and China, as you know. You're living out there in Asia, so you got a close-up seat there, front row seat to the whole thing. But that's exactly right. The Ukrainian prime minister refused to complete free trade, quote-unquote, agreements with the European Union. And the people were very upset about that, James. They want to be part of the European Union, allegedly. And the next thing you know, people are out in the streets, and it still hasn't slowed down. I don't know exactly what it's going to end up being, but there are some pretty captivating pictures of people toppling Lenin's statue in the Ukraine. And I'm sure, you know, they have every reason to protest. And like, I guess like an Occupy or a Tea Party here in the United States of America, these protests can easily be manipulated and hijacked. So with the not really any help coming from the West, or no condemnation coming from the West, we see how they pick and choose their reactions. It looks like Ukraine could fall to NATO powers completely and totally. And this was the cataclysm. And then, of course, what will happen, the first thing they'll do is go join the European Union in this trade agreement.
That's right. Well, you bring up an interesting point, because I haven't actually seen any reactions from any of the other world leaders about what's going on right now. I'm not sure what's been said. Has Obama or any of his minions come out to say anything about what's happening right now?
They're watching it, James. They've been very busy, of course, as you know, eulogizing the great African leader and taking pictures of themselves and hobnobbing, going and playing golf and cutting ribbons. No, they haven't. They're urging caution and a peaceful solution. No indication of any possibility of any compromises. And I'm betting here that once this is all said and done, we'll look at the documents and see they even fueled this.
Well, I am as skeptical as you of all of these types of revolutions, and I always think there is some sort of manipulation going on. But just to contrast some of this, I recently, just last week, had the chance to meet a Ukrainian here in Japan who's teaching English here, bizarrely enough. So the first thing I asked, of course, was, hey, what's happening in the Ukraine? What's happening? What do you think about what's going on right now? Isn't it crazy? And she immediately said to me, what's crazy about it? The people hate the government, and anyone under 30 likes the European Union. So
The protesting, it's the solutions, right? Now, there's a lot of things in play with Ukraine that we won't have time to get into. They're trying to get a giant aid package of around $20 billion. They think they're going to get that from the EU, which is most likely going to come from Americans. Russia could, I think, really stir the pot here if they hand them over a big lump sum and keep them out of the European Union and potentially back Prime Minister, what's his name? I should know all of this, man. I'm sorry, this isn't good radio. I just had it in front of me because I wanted to get to another part of this. It's
you mean Yanukovych?
Yanukovych, exactly. So we have, you know, here like a carrot on a stick dangling is $18 to $20 billion, which shouldn't be a lot of money in the scheme of things, especially as we're giving $85 billion in quantitative easing to Wall Street here every month as Americans and much, much more to Europe. The other thing, of course, as you know, Ukraine's natural crucial gas supply. Who's going to control that? And right now, Russia has had a good free grip on that, and that's up for play. So you don't have these problems where there aren't any resources. It's just wherever the resources are and wherever the banking problems are. And, you know, compare again this to Iceland, who basically has overthrown their government and kicked out the bankers with pots and pans. So, you know, we can see what looks real and what doesn't look real. And Thailand looks like a real revolution. Iceland certainly did. Ukraine does not.
Well, I definitely share your skepticism there. And I think we've already seen some of this playing out before with the Orange Revolution and all this. So we'll have to see, I think, how this plays out. But I think you're right. I mean, for them to wed themselves to the EU at this point in time is just attaching yourself to a sinking ship.
Is it a good idea to be provoking Russia at this point? We are running into a crash collision with China for all intents and purposes here. I'm not predicting World War III, but we are on very thin ice. And it just doesn't seem like the smart thing to do to be provoking Russia at this point, who, by the way, just usurped more power over their media recently. Hey, there's a lot of problems here. We in the United States, we aren't on any kind of higher moral ground with China or Russia. And that's really been kind of debilitating for us, at least to lecture them on human rights and freedom of the press. We can't do that anymore. But it seems that and going back to the Boston bombing, how that was almost framed to be blamed on Russia, and keeping in mind that, you know, the alleged bomber was training in Chechnya at a Zbigniew Brzezinski front camp. But it looked like they were trying to blame that, and Russia had themselves backed up and had intercepted messages and was able to bring that to the attention of the people, or we might have never heard of the prior knowledge involved in the Boston bombing. So you tell me. I don't know if it's a good idea to get into this kind of ratcheting up of the behavior leading to potentially another Cold War.
Well, I think the new Cold War is shaping up, and I think it probably involves China, but Russia is obviously part of that mix, and they're not going to sit back on their heels while all of this happens. And I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of brinksmanship going on right now, and it's, of course, the so-called leaders deciding for the people where to stir up the horse manure. And
Trilateral commission, doesn't it? All of it. There's a great film out called Death by China. I just saw it. It's narrated by Martin Sheen. This is certainly something that can cross over to any political demographic, and I highly recommend it. And, you know, we all got to be careful because we don't want to, you know, demonize China to help reinforce this fear by the military-industrial complex. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about our economy and this kind of really unfair trade practice, and what could happen as the TPP bumps heads with the Shanghai cooperation. We're on some bumpy road coming up here.
We sure are. And the new air defense identification zones and everything is just a part of it. It is kind of a ratcheting up that's happening right now. But let's turn to a different theater of war and talk a little bit about Syria. Seymour Hersh, for those who don't know, just came out with an interesting report in the London Review of Books, which is not his usual place of publication. He usually writes for The New Yorker. But apparently they didn't want anything to do with this new report, which is talking about the Syrian false flag that we covered here on the Jack Blood Show, or on the Jack Blood Show a couple of months ago, actually as it was happening. But now Seymour Hersh is finally arriving to the party, and he's got some goods. Tell us a little bit about Hersh's report and what it tells us.
Well, didn't he come out and then try to retract a story that was in The Guardian, I believe, here just about 2 months ago, James, where he said Obama's full of poop, and that you don't want Seymour Hersh saying that, folks, and that the Boston bombing, really, there was no information to prove that the claim being made by the government of the bombers and how it went down even existed. And then he tried to retract that, but this was all on tape, and you got to hand it to The Guardian. They did not let him do that. So I don't know what he's up to or why all of a sudden he's raised his head after being very quiet for a few years, but this one is a bombshell, and it's got the entire West maneuvering to try to cover it up. And, of course, what he said in the, as you mentioned, London Review of Books – was that, and keeping in mind Hersh, you know, talked about the My Lai massacre, Abu Ghraib, he allegedly broke that story. I'm never quite sure if he's being fed this or if he's doing the investigating. But of course, what do we hear? That they, exactly what we said, that the administration cherry-picked the intelligence, citing conversations with intelligence and military officials that are speaking now on back channels. Part of the reason, and this involves, I think, a little bit of what happened in Benghazi. I believe there was at least some kind of electoral coup involved there, which we might have talked about before. But at this point, it looks a lot like what Bush did and Blair did to get us into war in Iraq. It's the same thing. I mean, this is why we call this guy Bush over here, or Cousin Barry. There just isn't any difference. Former senior intelligence officials told Hersh allegedly that the Obama administration had altered, not just cherry-picked, but altered the available information in terms of its timing and its sequence. This, of course, has to do with who used the chemical weapons, if anyone, in Syria. Now, the UN report, as you know, they went on the ground and they determined that there was no evidence that Bashar Assad's regime used the chemical weapons, and in fact that the information leaned more towards that that the rebels, the Western-backed rebels, obviously, or Sunni-backed rebels, had used this to create, well, what we all know now is a false flag. There's actually more information that I've just put out today that has an exchange of emails, which I think further bolsters the case that not only did they cherry-pick information on Syria, James, but they made it up.
No way. Imagine my shock.
Right? Well, I don't know, maybe you have new listeners who've never heard of the Gulf of Tonkin before, or, you know, even 9/11. But, and then the NSA is right in the middle of all of this. Of course, our wonderful NSA, I guess there's some more documents just put out by Snowden, which are even more jaw-dropping, where I'm kind of betting on him, by the way, of being Time Man of the Year, though, speaking of revolutions, what is it, General Assi, I believe they're saying could be the... odds on front. Al-Sisi, by the way, General Al-Sisi, who's on the what? How many revolutions are we at now in Egypt? I've lost count. Are we on four or five now?
Yeah, I've completely lost count by this point.
Ousted the former temporary leader who was talking about how 9/11 could have been an inside job. That guy's just immediately gone. And potentially, of course, Turkey's Erdogan could also be a member for the Times Man of the Year, where they put a lot of evil dictators on and people who kill children. I'm betting on Snowden, though. I for some reason, I feel it. But who knows? And is it important? No.
No, it isn't. That's a good point. But I think you're probably right. I mean, Snowden would be the obvious pick in that. But yes. So what's your take on Snowden? I mean, is he real? Is this all a big limited hangout?
Boy, I got to tell you, it looks like exactly what they want us to know. Sometimes I think that, you know, they want us to think that they're watching us all the time, because the truth of the matter is they can't. They really can't. Even though they have sophisticated, you know, information gathering machines, as I think George Bush would have put it. But, you know, carnivore and echelon on steroids. Even though they have this technology, they can't sort it out. What they do, though, of course, is store it. And if they ever need to use it against you to make a case, whether you want to get into politics and maybe they've got something on you that will keep you out, or it's a good way to control the politicians with blackmail and extortion, I don't know. I really can't tell you. Snowden, I would think if he was a real whistleblower, as we talked about before with some of the other NSA whistleblowers, we probably wouldn't have heard so much about him, right? So I am a little bit skeptical, and I think if they put him on Time magazine for Man of the Year, I'm probably going to be even more skeptical. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm with you. I think it, even if he was real, he's certainly being manipulated. And for people who don't know, Sybil Edmonds just took the gloves off with Glenn Greenwald and his reporting on Snowden. So more to come from Boiling Frogs Post on that.
You got a quick synopsis on that?
Basically, she's calling him out for his checkbook journalism and the fact that he's, of course, running to this multi-millionaire to start this new organization to report on these things. She was pointing out some of the things he said in the past, like, oh, you know, I mean, we're gonna get all of this out in the next couple of months. And now here we are several months later, and it's they've released about 1% of the documents. And and now he's going to write a book for a major publisher. She's pointing out that she couldn't find a publisher for her book because no one would touch it unless the FBI specifically cleared it for her, and blah, blah, blah.
That could be something that Glenn Greenwald is actively involved in or isn't. You know, a lot of times a guy can be so compartmentalized away and just sees the deal and gets the deal that maybe he's not part of it. You see what I'm saying? But yeah, he's a beneficiary of it.
Well, here's something to think about and something that I think Sybil's going to be reporting on in the near future. We've seen all of these connections coming out with different companies and their connections to the NSA, like Facebook and Google and all the usuals, Microsoft and all of this. Have we seen anything about PayPal yet?
No, but I did report today that JP Morgan is filing a patent for Bitcoins.
Ooh.
Is that...
That
close
is
enough.
Interesting. Well, that is interesting. Well, my point is just that we haven't seen anything about NSA and PayPal. And who's the person who's paying Greenwald billions to do his reporting, or $250 million or whatever it is? Oh, it's the founder of PayPal.
So, Peter Thiel.
Yeah. Omidyar. Omidyar, who runs eBay. Which owns PayPal basically. So
Peter Thiel, one of the founders at PayPal, you know, he was a big supporter of Ron Paul and a Bilderberger, which was very confusing to Ron Paul supporters. One thing I want to go back and put on the record regarding Hirsch, and we've got the story at deadlinelive.info, is the buried intelligence on the fundamentalist group, rebel group al-Nusra. We've been talking about this for quite a while, how they did have the capabilities to make and use and obtain sarin gas. It's a damning report, and I'm really confused as to why Seymour Hersh is doing this, but maybe he's just got a streak of patriotism in him. Maybe he just wants the big story and is going for another Pulitzer Prize. It is a huge thorn in the side of the Kerry Obama administration. And wasn't it weird that all we heard about was the sarin gas and the poor people of Syria? And we were leading up to that attack, which I credit people like yourself for stopping. We really had a global consensus to not bomb Syria. It's the first time I've seen this happen in my life. So we're obviously gaining some strides here on all this. But after we decided not to go in, no more news. No, not one drop, nothing, not a sentence written anywhere about what's going on in Syria. Very odd.
Yeah, exactly. Well, of course, that gives the lie to any pretext of humanitarian intervention, but we already knew that. But you're right. There is always new people tuning in who might not get what's going on there. And that's just one of those blatant examples. Exactly like Libya. Once we bombed the hell out of that and the country went to hell, who cares? We'll never hear about it in the news ever again. So that's just the way the propaganda cycle works. All right, let's turn to some other things up at Deadline Live. Once again, people who aren't visiting deadlinelive.info on a regular basis don't know what they're missing, because there's always tons of really interesting stories coming out of there, and I use it as a resource for myself in researching various subjects. One of them, of course, 9/11. Why not? Senator Graham recently came out to talk to the real news, quote-unquote, with Paul Jay, and apparently talking about some inside job type rhetoric. What's happening here?
Well, and it builds the case of, yeah, it's incompetence theory again, James, which you did a great piece on, I believe, back in the day. Senator Graham is back in the news, and you're right to put the quotation into the real news. It's very soft, and so people that are, you know, really down the rabbit hole on 9/11 probably won't think much of this article, but I did want it to put it up for people who are still just now discovering this, because Graham does make a pretty good case for prior knowledge. For those daily briefing reports, it wasn't vague. They knew that allegedly airplanes would be crashed into buildings, and they did absolutely nothing about it. And of course, we have Condoleezza Rice coming out even years later completely denying that they had any knowledge of that. And so I like to see Senator Graham saying that, but I don't like where it goes. And where does it go? Well, we need to, again, centralize intelligence, which we already, you know, put Negroponte as the first intelligence czar here. We're not supposed to be having these problems anymore. But of course, when the next thing happens, James, maybe it's the Boston bombing, where they were, well, they were interviewing and knew the bombers. they had complete, you know, tabs on these alleged, and I mean alleged bombers in the Boston bombing. But then again, it was just, again, incompetence. So he wants to, you know, get these, all this up to light and fix the incompetence so it won't happen again, and maybe get himself a little bit publicity. I don't know if it's much more than that. I don't know if there's much more to it than that, but there certainly is a pretty good case for prior knowledge here. And I think that that's a huge component in any false flag. So any way I can, you know, add to that story, I'd like to do it.
Well, here's my take on what's going on. Graham is coming out now, and he is building this case. They knew what was happening beforehand, but there was kind of a culture of look the other way because it's the Saudis, and the Saudis are our friends. But I think it's interesting that this is coming out now. You know, why 11, 12 years after the fact? Why is he suddenly piping up about this? Why is it getting attention? I really think that there is starting to, basically the green light has been flipped on to demonize the Saudis. And I really think that in the last few months, that's really been stepping up. And we've seen CFR puppet Fareed Zakaria and others really starting to step up attacks on the Saudis and calling them out for terrorists and all of this. And the Saudis are returning fire. They're calling out the U.S. and saying that they turned down the U.N. Security Council seat because of the U.S. wouldn't bomb the hell out of Syria and all of this kind of stuff. I think that the Saudi-U.S. alliance is really starting to break up, and I really think this is just one consequence of that. If we can lay the blame of 9/11 on Saudi's doorstep, hey, then, you know, that's a good way to demonize someone who's fast becoming, if not an enemy, at least certainly not a close ally anymore.
Well, this is another reason to go after Caspian Sea oil and find alternatives to oil, because they don't, I believe the powers that be, at least in this country, are pretty sick of those guys and are tired of having to deal with them and have their back put against the wall by the Saudis. So you could have something there, James, and we might see the detachment of our brotherly love for the the wonderful
the petrodollar Saudis. Love, yeah.
Well, I mean, that we might be a ways off from that still. But, you know, this is how the New World Order works, the global economy and those that control it in petrodollar or global reserve currency, all of these things that are kind of tied together, because we can see the path and the trail. Those who don't agree to be on the petrodollar get punished. And we're watching this happen, you know, one after the next. So the landscape is shifting dramatically, and I might even add to your analysis and completely agree with it in that this could bring something else here, another 9/11, a 9/12, as I've called it often, the sequel to 9/11. You're almost amazed that we haven't had it yet, but I just, you know, I think they're doing okay. Now, as the people wake up and get more information, you see, you know, this stalled war or stopped war in Syria was a huge blow to the powers that be on their, you know, grand chessboard. They might have to hit you back and get you scared again. And then, well, why not just blame the Saudis now if they're out?
Yeah, well, it's, I don't like to think about that, but I think you're right. I mean, they're certainly the sequel is always up the sleeve, and we'll see what comes of that.
It's important. Intelligence Matters is Graham's book. And again, you're not going to get a ton out of it. But if it makes the case for prior knowledge, that's a huge, the prior knowledge, the stand down and the cover up. And of course, who benefits from 9/11? These are the pillars of, you know, why we know the government's conspiracy theory about 9/11 is completely a giant lie.
Agreed. All right. Well, just before we wrap up here, a couple of things. It's the month of anniversaries, December 7th, of course, Pearl Harbor Day. And I noticed you had a Pearl Harbor post up on Deadline Live. But December 8th, perhaps even more interestingly for myself anyway, John Lennon's assassination. And I saw you posted up a bunch of stuff that you've done on the Lennon assassination in the past. And I have listened to your talk with James Truth and I think Mac White back in 2005. I have listened to it before, but not recently. Tell us basically your take on the Lennon assassination.
Sure. Well, you have to, you know, look at Mark David Chapman and look at his almost complete and total mind conditioning in these Christian cult groups or whatever that he was in. But the weirdest part about that is that he goes and he supposedly shoots John Lennon in the back and just stands there. And it's like he doesn't know what he did. And then somebody has to go up to him and go, "You just shot John Lennon." But I thought it was really compelling that the doorman, Jose Padermo, was actually involved in the Bay of Pigs. And as we know, those guys, we call them plumbers, had involvement in Watergate and the JFK assassination. I mean, these are people that did wet work all over the place. Now, you might ask, and I know not everything's a conspiracy, James, but you might ask, well, why get rid of John Lennon? And we have to look at the time. It was 1980. This is now the time of Ronald Reagan. And you can't have John Lennon around, who just woke up after a five-year nap, basically, with a new hit record. You can't have him out, you know, talking to the people about peace and war and money and Ronald Reagan, because it could create some major backlash. So a huge problem. And I just think they didn't want him around. They didn't want to have to deal with that. Not to mention there is a certain amount of ritual sacrifice that goes on in this. But you have to listen to our interview, folks. It's you know, some of it's a little crazy, maybe. I don't know. I hate to say that about the work I even do, because I just want to keep an open mind. But a lot of the parts don't fit. So, and I should remind people that December 8th, also, they gunned down on stage, Dimebag Darrell was his name, from the group Pantera. He was, you know, had a new group at that point. But, you know, here's another highly disturbed lone nut who goes in and not only shoots him, but some other people. My advice to rock stars is, you know, don't go out on December 8th. Probably not a good idea. I believe that's also Jim Morrison's birthday. And there's a lot of weird stuff about Jim Morrison being involved, his dad being involved with the Gulf of Tonkin. And, you know, so you can get into that stuff, too. But I don't doubt that, you know, a cultural icon like Lennon could be a target for the political upper class.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is my take on it. I always wonder, you know, to the extent that John Lennon was really against the Illuminati, or whatever you want to call it, given his, you know, communism and that kind of thing. But he certainly was changing his political views at all times. And he definitely was a threat to the status quo. So I can see why he was targeted by the FBI, as we now know he was.
That one of the insiders, I don't know if there's anything to this, and I forget the guy's name, but you'll see him all the time when they talk about John Lennon. He was kind of more Yoko's friend than John's friend, but he was there all the time. And he said that John, in the end, had become more conservative, even, he said, Republican. But that doesn't mean that you're going to sit and swallow Ronald Reagan. Now, remember what happened. What was it? A month later, Ronald Reagan. 2 months later, I guess it would have been, Ronald Reagan was gunned down by Hinckley, a friend of the Bushes, who was also involved in the same cult as Mark David Chapman. So there's a weird connection there that I think, you know, I guess people smarter than me or with more time than me have written about in the past. And I encourage people to look into it. If nothing else, it's kind of fun to dig into this and give us some relief from the political conspiracies, you know?
It is fascinating stuff. And I know that Mae Brussel did some great work in that back in the day, so people can check into her archives. Yeah, excellent. Well, I'd love to believe that John Lennon really was a revolutionary, like, in a real sense, because I just love his music. So
John Lennon believes the government killed his dad. So Julian's not saying anything. In fact, I'm friends with Julian on Facebook. That means we're buddies.
Yep.
And he was quiet that whole week, even though he has a new comeback record. Didn't say one peep about this, which I think sometimes the silence speaks volumes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. Who is the modern day John Lennon?
Anyway. They said it was Kurt Cobain, but I knew Kurt. He was no John Lennon. An amazing artist and not very political, I guess, in the way that I think John Lennon was. See, John Lennon was, you know, extremely well read. He'd fallen, kind of like us. He'd fallen for a lot of the traps, whether it be communism or socialism or all the other isms, right? He was vastly against globalism. You look at some of the things he said at the end there about international banks and globalism and free trade and some of these weird things that we see now today. And of course, divide and conquer and race wars and this kind of thing. And it makes him a pretty dangerous guy to have around. It's hard to believe, man, that we can talk about this forever. But it's hard to believe that he was only 40 years old at the time, 10 years younger than myself. You know, so he had a lot of gas in the tank still. But you just look at what he said at the end, and that was that's a guy who really straightened himself out and could have been extremely dangerous. So there is no John Lennon, unfortunately. And this is one of the things that I call him the Illuminati. You can call it anything you want. Illuminati distribution cartel, which is breaking down the big five or big six record companies, try to encourage. They want mindless robots singing bubblegum pop music like, you know, Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus. What's the other guy? Alan Thicke's kid. Tell me, you know, 20 years ago that the newest, greatest thing was going to be Billy Cyrus's kid and Alan Thicke's kid. I'd have told you you're nuts, but here we are.
Yeah, so it is.
It's probably new John Lennon is probably somebody we know or somebody in a garage somewhere right now who maybe could capture the imagination of the world with great music. If it can be done by my friends in Seattle, and none of them ever thought they would be, you know, that famous or that big or have that much influence culturally, I guess it could happen again, right?
Well, let's hope so. And there's always, I guess, the hope. But I'm going to do a music podcast at some point talking about some of these connections and some of these people and Jim Morrison's father and all of this. So I'm going to have to get you on for that. But in the meantime...
Well, let me tell you, I have this month, and then we'll wrap up. This month, I have Christmas with rock stars kind of a thing. So I've got Bruce Pavitt, who discovered Nirvana and the owner of Sub Pop. I've got Tom Cinco, who was in White Zombie, the original guitar player. I've got Helios Creed from Chrome. So we've just got a bunch of guys we're going to spend Christmas with here at DeadlineLive.info. And then I'm going to announce here, James, any day, my new home for a 5-day-a-week show, which I stopped to work on another project and going back on 5 days a week live. And I hope people will support us there. We've got a new website we're going to be launching called Radio Free Blood, hopefully by the end of the month here, by New Year's. And we desperately need support, and your listeners are always so cool and so generous. I can't ask you in any more humble terms to please support us in our blood bomb, which starts tomorrow, or go to deadlinelive.info, find out how to donate to us and keep us going, or write me at jackblood@hotmail.com. Your support is just never been more needed than it is right now. We're about to make a huge jump, and that's going to help us reach more people with our message.
Excellent. Well, I am glad to hear that. I'm very much looking forward to it, and I will be there front and center once you get your 5-day-a-week show going again. I'm looking forward to that very much. All right. DeadlineLive.info is the place to go for the time being, and we're looking forward to Radio Free Blood. Jack Blood, I think that's going to do it for this month. Thank you so much for your time.
James Corbett, you rock. Stay bold, everybody. Mighty forces will come to your aid. Thanks.